This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Mysterious Story of Gaetano Cervantes. Vignettes of life and death under a broken system of criminal justice. Our author and researcher, Finbar Mangan. Welcome, sir.
Good to be with you, Jay.
I would call this an important read, especially because of your perspective. You have worked as a volunteer inside the correction institutes and have discovered these stories that you wanted to share. Tell me how this book came about.
I was engaged in prison ministry for over 8 years, became a certified volunteer chaplain, and got to know hundreds of men, some of them better than others. And then I got, I guess, asking too many questions, and so they asked me to keep serving as a volunteer. And so after that, I maintained correspondence with 20 or more men, and several of these men, in their letters, they gave me more and more information about who they were and how they came to be in prison. And in this, there was a lot of injustice that came to the surface. Two of the men are almost certainly innocent. And so I felt there was an imperative to get this message out to the public so it would achieve a better understanding of what goes on in our courts, what might happen to them, and also how people are treated in prison, whether they're good guys or not.
There are some nonprofit organizations out there that are set up to help individuals who have been unjustly accused or incarcerated. Have any of these gentlemen accessed any of these organizations?
Yes, two of the men have been trying for years with various innocence projects, and they haven't had much luck. One of them recently wrote me that he has had a student appointed to look at his case. The other, who is most clearly innocent and has an excellent alibi, has applied, and they said they would look at it, but this has gone on for a couple of years, and he still has not had anybody appointed to his case.
Tell our listeners the background of the story of Gaetano Cervantes. If the story he has told you is correct and based on fact, then it appears that he is an innocent man.
Yes. He's a fascinating character, Mexican citizen, grew up, went to Cuba to try to get an education, and they sent him to Russia, so he spent some time on some secret operations for a couple of years in Russia. Came back from there, went back to Cuba, got a degree in humanities and was teaching in school in the years 1997-1998, and did not enter the country till 1999. After entering the country, he came to know a young boy, I call him Enrique in the book, and got from him a story that is absolutely incredible. It is, if it were true, it involves a sex club in a major city where there are some very important people involved. It would involve the FBI, the CIA, the police, judges, people like this, if it were true. And so it is highly unlikely that it is true. And yet he received the same story independently from two different people. And if it is not true, then the question is, well, what's he doing in prison?
Mm-mm.
Because, you know, his case was, it's so clear that he must be innocent. He was given a court-appointed attorney who was a doofus. That attorney, during the trial, did not mention an alibi. And when it came time for the defense, he said, the defense rests.
Wow.
So that's a little bit of the story of Gaetano.
And he was actually out of the country when this accusation or this event occurred.
He had not entered the country in 1997. He was in Cuba teaching, and I have copies of his diploma, the proof from their Cuban books that he was teaching, and other affidavits.
You have other individuals that are mentioned in here. Tell me the story of Ted Perkins.
Okay. Ted Perkins is now an elderly man in his 70s. Very gentle, caring guy. He was a director of two choirs. He has COPD. He got on the wrong side of a chaplain, So the chaplain had him removed from the choir. About this time, he had to be going to the infirmary because he needed oxygen. They've kept him in the infirmary for almost 4 years now. They've locked him up like he was an ADSEG prisoner, which is you stay in there 23 hours a day. And so he has written some grievances because of a poor medical treatment, and they retaliate by giving him bogus cases, and so it goes from bad to worse. He, with another inmate now, has actually filed a lawsuit in federal court to try to get some kind of justice for himself.
This book that you've written, The Mysterious Story, starting with Mr. Cervantes, who do you think is going to find this an intriguing read and find it of benefit?
I think a general audience would. Anybody that picks it up and gets into it a little bit will find it appealing, but the nature of the content is something that would be good for law students to read, to understand our criminal justice system better. It would be very important for people who volunteer in prison ministry to read, so that they're alert to what goes on in their units and give some thought into how, you know, they can give feedback to the system to improve it. Just a wide variety of people, I think, would benefit by the book.
Finbar, you have a subtitle, Vignettes of Life and Death Under a Broken System. Tell me the genesis of that.
Well, the men in the book, their lives are in danger every day. And unfortunately, part of the story is that of the five men, two of them do not make it out of the book alive.
And were they executed, or were they? Did they just die through natural causes?
No. One of them may have died a natural death, or it may have been the result of medical malpractice. The other, it may have been natural as a result of years of mismedication, or he may have actually been murdered.
Wow. That's stunning. Tell our listeners how long it took you to do the research and discover the stories behind the stories of these individuals mentioned in your book.
It developed over a period of 3 years, and not so much researching as simply receiving their letters and compiling them and editing them into a form which was sort of like journaling.
You have 468 pages. That's a lot of journaling, a lot of conversation going on.
It certainly is. There is one chapter, the sixth chapter, which is an overview of the prison system throughout the United States. I don't want to focus on any one state because these problems, they exist in California and Colorado and Illinois and Texas, all over the place. And so it's very comprehensive in that way.
How would you introduce your book to someone who may not be interested in the criminal justice system and the stories you are about to tell, but needs to be?
Well, I would say, do you have an interest in justice? Do you have an interest in truth? Do you think these values are important in our society? A lot of people think, well, there's so many things going on that are more important. Why spend time on a bunch of criminals? But the thing is, I like to compare our society, say, to one of these cruisers in the Caribbean that get the norovirus.
Right.
You get that virus on board, everybody gets sick. The passengers, the crew, everybody. If you have a disease in society of lack of truth and lack of justice and lack of accountability, it spreads everywhere. If it exists in our prison system, in our courts, we have to address it. We need to know about it, and we have to see, well, is there a way I can get involved?
It's an important message that you're sharing with individuals and with the public regarding these cases. What do you think sets this book apart from the rest in the marketplace that are in defense of those who have been incarcerated?
Well, I might respond to that question with a question for you. Have you ever been in a prison?
I've visited, yes.
Okay. Have you ever been in a high security?
Visited there as well.
Okay. Well, you know, not many people get back there. That I think, and also, I guess you've probably been on a jury?
No, as a matter of fact, I have not, and primarily because I am not a U.S. citizen.
All right.
I'm a visitor from another
planet.
The
thing is, a lot of people have not been on juries. They've not had the opportunity to sit through an entire criminal trial and then go back and analyze it line by line to say, well, what the heck happened here? And so I think that this book gives people this opportunity to go somewhere they've never been before and probably won't go.
Beautifully put. The themes of your book, what is the underlying message you want to get across?
I would say the underlying message is that we are in a quest for truth and justice. It's interesting, the name I made up for Gaetano, which of course all my names are fabricated, real people, but invented names, Cervantes, the author of Don Quixote, The quest for the impossible dream. And Gaetano means gypsy, and he certainly has been a gypsy. And so his whole thing is his quest for justice, just to be treated as a decent human being and to receive, you know, the kind of justice he deserves. He is actually a poet. He sent me 40 poems that he has. I wonder if I could share one of those with you.
Yes, please do.
Okay, he called it, "I Always Feel So Alone." One time I put this to some music and I called it The Prisoner's Lament. That goes like this. When the light of life has vanished and all the good has gone, the joy also is finished, and I always feel so alone. Oh, Lord, come to my life. I don't want to be the same. I lift up my eyes to the dark and cloudy heaven. Is there nothing I can change? Oh, Lord, come back again. This world suffers too much pain. There is no love, no friends. We all have forsaken you, and no one seems to understand. Come to my heart, O Lord. It seems the light of life is o'er, and time exists no more. O Lord, come to my life. I don't want to be the same. I lift up my eyes to the dark and cloudy heaven. Let me see what I can change.
A powerful expression, isn't it?
I believe so. Remember, this guy is from Mexico. And when he came to the United States, he spoke very little English. And he's writing a poem like this in our own language.
Not only that, but it's evident it's coming from his heart. So that part is impressive. There are a lot of cons in prison. Mm-hmm. People who can tell a story and weave a tale that is not necessarily factual. Do you have any difficulty with the people that you have had correspondence with in believing their story? Is there any concern about that?
No, I know what you mean about cons, having met a great number of the men in prison. But I've known these people, you know, these guys, 8-10 years, and you just don't sustain a con story over that amount of time. It doesn't happen. And so I'm personally convinced of that what they say and what they believe is true. Gaetano has this fantastic story, which he believes is true. I don't know whether it is or not, but he believes it.
Right. Are there two or three words that would describe their condition, their situation in prison, and what you hope to achieve for them?
Well, their situation is full of abuse. It's desperate. It's depressing. And what I would hope to achieve for them in prison is just decent treatment as human beings, but also the hope that, who knows, maybe an attorney would read this and want to take on a case pro bono. This happened, you know, are you familiar with the story of Michael Morton?
Yes.
Okay. 25 years in prison in Texas. And an Innocence Project and also an independent lawyer took on his case pro bono. And after years and years, through DNA in his case, they finally had him proclaimed innocent. When he came out, the main thing he talked about, he said, we've got to have accountability.
Accountability is important in every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
What was the most significant experience of these men?
Well, there are certain scenes in their life, you know, it would make a great movie, I think. How about if I just go through a few of those?
Love to hear those.
Picture an SUV with blacked-out windows, something like the CIA, the FBI uses, and it's going down an interstate highway. And a thunderstorm comes up with a tremendous wind. It catches a flatbed truck and throws it across the highway. The back of the truck hits the front of the SUV, instantly killing the two people in the front seat. Two Latinos just happen on the spot, come up behind it. and they hear somebody crying, "Ayuda, ayuda." So they open it up, and there's a 13-year-old kid in handcuffs, plastic handcuffs. And they cut him out, and they take him away. That was the beginning of this story that Gitano told about this supposed sex club. And he thinks that this boy had escaped from that club, and they were taking him to be executed. He hadn't escaped at that time. They're taking him to be executed because he found out what was going on and knew too much about it. So that kind of sets an interesting scene or background to Gitano's story and why he might have been arrested.
Hmm.
You know, he was put in county jail for 5 months without being charged or given a lawyer. There's a form in which you have a right to contact your consulate, and somebody forged his signature on that form. He never actually saw it.
That's
so
amazing.
So that's an interesting scene. Another one is they put him in a cell, and they took a man who had been on death row, and it was released because of mental incapacity, and they put him as a cellmate for Gitano. He comes back from a religious education service one day. He finds this guy has got a hold of a shank or some kind of razor. He's cutting Gitano's property to pieces and flushing his commissary down the toilet. 3 weeks later, this guy is taken out, and he tries to jump off of a third floor and kill himself.
Hmm.
How would you like your cellmate to be somebody like this? Why would they put somebody like this, who's very high risk, obviously, in a cell with a minimum risk prisoner? So there's just a couple of scenes. One other I might mention with Ted Perkins. They took him to a unit for a medical exam because supposedly he had a spot on his lung. They suspended him, put his hands over his head in handcuffs, mishandled the operation they were doing to take a biopsy, and he began bleeding and spitting up blood. How would you like to be suspended spitting up blood? So those are a couple of very dramatic scenes.
Very dramatic. And yeah. Was there anything that was challenging about putting your book together, getting this information in a written form?
Well, I put these letters in magazine types of files. Each one's about 6 inches wide. And I have over 3 feet of those. So it's a kind of a challenging job as those things come in to decide, you know, what to put in, what to leave out, and have it follow in a way so the reader can follow it and make sense. Also, I obtained the trial transcripts for the two of the men and read those cover to cover. And it's a challenge there to go through that and to ferret that out so the story is told. And in telling the story, I wanted to be fair. I wanted to be balanced. So I presented the arguments of the prosecution as well as the defense so the reader could make up his or her mind about whether the injustice was achieved.
A balanced book? A balanced story of several penitentiary inmates. The title is The Mysterious Story of Gitano Cervantes, Vignettes of Life and Death Under a Broken System of Criminal Justice. And our author, Finbar Mangan. Thank you, sir, for joining us today. Where can I get a copy of your book?
At the usual places. It's available through the publisher, which is www.archwaypublishing.com. And also through Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. If you go to those sites, there are actually quite a few pages from the book that are available on the site if you want to get into it and see a little bit more about how it reads.
Do you plan an update on these men and their stories in the future?
Well, I'm in the process of getting a website set up, which will have a blog. And I anticipate that in that blog I will be able to update their stories, and I would like to add stories of others that I haven't put in the book.
Thank you for sharing this information today, this story, the backdrop of the mysterious story of Gitano Cervantes. And those who want to do a search online for our author, his name is spelled F-I-N-B-A-R, last name M-A-N-G-H-A-N. Finbar, thank you for joining me today.
Very good to be with you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune in to TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of this book, and one that I'm concerned about, is titled Dating, Rational Relating, The Smart Way to Stay Sane in a Crazy World of Love. And our author, who has stepped in it and stepped out of it, is Damon L. Jacobs. Welcome, Damon, to the program.
Thank you, Jay. It's so great to be on your program. I love this program.
Well, you're a courageous guy. You wrote a book on relationship, I'm guessing, I won't say dating, but it has to do with relationship and love. And besides the fact that you're a licensed marriage and family therapist, why jump in the middle of this mud puddle?
Well, so, Jay, I'm a licensed marriage family therapist in New York and California, and I actually began seeing couples when I was an intern in California back in 1996. And to be honest with you, I really, really dreaded seeing them at first. It seemed like people always waited until the very last minute to come to therapy to resolve their relationship issues. And so often I saw relationships dissipate under the pressures of the frustrations and the resentments that had just been building up for years, and this kind of exploded in the therapy room. And I always pondered that, because it seemed, you know, people don't wait until the house is burnt down to call the fire department. People don't wait till everything is over before they ask for help in other areas. So why do they wait to see a therapist until the very last minute, until the relationship is over? And I thought, what if I could help couples find a way to get help before the crisis that leads to that so-called relationship 911 call? What if people could be proactive instead of reactive about their relationships, right?
Right.
And at the same time, living in California, growing up in California, you get used to a lot of unstable stuff with the ground. Earthquakes happen. The earth can shake around you literally at all times. And having gone through several of the big earthquakes, including the 1989 Loma Prieta quake, I saw that the buildings that were built on a very rigid and inflexible brick foundation were the first to fall. But the newer buildings that were built to sort of withstand the stress and the quakes and to be flexible, those were the ones that were more likely to stand in the aftermath of a major quake. And I was in grad school at the time, and I thought, wow, why don't we think about building relationships the way we're starting to think about building these buildings? Able to withstand the big quakes and the little quakes that happen over time.
Damon, my wife and I have been married all of our adult life, married and met her in college, have adult children. Every once in a while, there's a pothole that shows up in our relationship. How do you address those types of things and smooth out the road?
Well, what this book will do is to help couples deal exactly with those kinds of questions. Because first, it encourages couples to really do an inventory of their values, of their priorities. So you and your partner are able to see, this is what matters to you, this is what matters to me. And then the book helps people to create a framework for finding compromise, for finding middle ground. I think that's becoming more and more scarce in our culture, Jay. I think we're finding in conflict resolution, whether it's in personal or professional relationships or political relationships, we're seeing less and less middle ground that people are willing to engage in.
Right.
But it's exactly the middle ground in our primary relationships where we're able to create something new. be able to create a unique bond and a unique connection to say, look, this is what you want, this is what I want. We both can give, we both can create from an original place, and that really involves respecting each other.
In the area of compromise, what are the tools you suggest and recommend to keep a marriage sane and on a good level foundation?
Well, I think there can be a time and place for different kinds of compromise. I think in the long term, that's not the healthiest way to do it. I talk a lot in my book about the art and skill of compromise and balance, because it's not just your way and it's not just her way. That's not a relationship. That would be a J-ship, not a relationship. Or that would be her ship. A relationship is two people contributing together. And sometimes the answer might be, yes, let's do it your way. Yeah. But if that's always the way it's done, that's not really creating a balance structure that's going to mutually be satisfying to both people.
That may be where I got that knot on my head. I'm not sure.
Could be.
It could be. In all relationships, at times there can be a period of mistrust. How do you address that?
Well, the issue of trust, I think, is more of a symptom of a problem than the problem itself. And the problem itself is when there's a lack of integrity coming into the relationship. Now, when I say integrity, what I mean is that your actions follow what your stated values are. So that if you're saying that you believe in monogamy, for example, that you don't follow up those values by having sexual relations with people outside the marriage. Okay, and this comes up a lot in couples therapy, as I'm sure you can realize. This comes up a lot in popular culture and in media all the time, this issue.
Right.
Now, if you say one thing and you do another, that's going to do damage to your relationship structure, and that will mean lack of trust. How do you trust someone when they're inconsistent on a regular basis? What I help couples do is to get very, very clear what are our values and how do we show up, and our actions state those values. For a lot of the couples I work with, that means having a very realistic, down-to-earth, rational, no-holds-barred conversation about monogamy and about sexual and or emotional expression outside the primary relationship. It doesn't mean that people do it, but it does mean that we at least talk about that, that we at least create agreements and negotiations and specifics about that. That's where I see trust being irreparably damaged the most often.
If one of our listeners should find themselves in an awkward situation where they need to structure an apology, share your observations and perhaps some recommendations.
Well, apologies can be... Apologies are tricky because if they're not sincere and they're not in integrity, they can come off, they can sometimes do more damage. An example would be, let's say, you say you're going to come home to your wife and you're working late at the office and she's waiting for you and you're not there. A sincere apology might look something like, I really messed up and I'm really sorry and that wasn't what I intended to do and I'm going to do better next time. That kind of apology can carry a long weight. An insincere apology might be something like, well, I'm sorry you're having a problem with this, but I had to work late. Why don't you understand that? That kind of apology isn't really going to float. That's not really going to repair the damage. That kind of makes it sound like, well, what's your problem? It's not my problem. And again, this is a relationship. So when it's a problem, it's a problem.
And your advice also is to start from a standpoint of gratitude. Gratitude goes a long ways in a relationship.
If people began the day and ended the day with gratitude, I'd probably be out of a job at some point. I think gratitude is the most important component of a relationship. Gratitude doesn't mean that you love or you like everything your partner does. Gratitude doesn't mean you don't get pissed off or angry or frustrated with your partner from time to time. But gratitude is a basic stance. It's a basic appreciation that this person who has chosen to spend their life with you is still with you at the beginning of the day and the end of the night. It's a way of saying thank you. I have the couples I work with regularly do thank you exercises, even and especially when they're angry with each other. Yes, I'm angry with you, and I'm still really grateful that you're here to have this conversation and to work through these conflicts and these compromises with me. Gratitude really taps into a part of our minds that is capable of kind of getting a little bit of distance, seeing the bigger picture, focusing on empathy and how we remain in connection even when we feel upset.
If someone in the relationship is going through a period of depression, What is your advice to them? Both individuals are affected by that. The one who is experiencing depression and the one who is on the sidelines observing it. How would you approach the observer? What would you suggest they do?
Well, for the observer, and this would be assuming that the source of depression isn't directly related to the relationship. If it has to do with something else, maybe even a chemical imbalance or a grief or something that's not directly related to the relationship, I would encourage the person who is suffering with depression to be in counseling. And I would encourage the observer to keep the lines of communication open, to realize that you don't have to fix this, and actually you can't fix this. I would help the observer to kind of cope with the feelings of hopelessness and despair and impotence that can, emotional impotence that can come up when somebody you love is suffering and there's not a whole heck of a lot you can do about it. How do you stay present? How do you stay open? How do you not get sucked into the vortex of depression when you are living and caring for someone who is suffering with that? And every situation is going to be a little bit different about how you do that. But the basic premise is realizing, you know, the serenity prayer, you know, give me the strength to change the things I can, the ability to accept the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. Try to apply that every day when someone you love is suffering, whether it's depression or with any other kind of illness.
You've penned 184 pages, not only of advice, but also some personal inventory ideas and even some work pages. Who is going to benefit from your book, do you think? Who's your target audience?
Certainly anybody who is engaged or interested in engaging in any kind of relationship or primary romantic, intimate, sexual relationship is going to benefit from this. Especially, however, for people that are new in their relationship, going toward marriage or going towards partnership, people that are saying, we're going to build this foundation together, let's get the materials right, let's get the right tools, the right materials to build this foundation so that it's long-lasting, durable, and can sort of bend with the wind and bend with the quakes. I often tell couples, especially if they're in their 20s or 30s, say, look, here's the deal. Life expectancy right now is about 80 years old, and it's bound to be up to 100 by the time you get older, or maybe more. So you might be living with this person for the next 70, 80 years. Given that, let's talk now about what we foresee as some of the obstacles or some of the differences in priorities that may come up. Not only about sexual monogamy, but let's talk about money spending. How are we going to negotiate and arrange around money? Whether you're going to have children or not, where are you going to go on your vacations? The big things and the little things that will help couples maintain their relationship structure over time and have less need for marriage, family therapists, and divorce lawyers.
I love the way you've structured your book as well. You've built it on the idea of a house plan, building a house, building a home, laying a foundation, integrity, communication, compassion, responsibility, and compromise. And then your final chapter is Welcome to the New Home. Building on the right emotional foundations is certainly a way to have a successful relationship and a successful life. Was there anything about writing this book that was challenging in putting this into print?
Well, I think the most challenging part was probably the most rewarding part, and that is when you start to get into these areas that remain a bit of a societal taboo, when you start to get into areas where there's secrets and shame, then people are afraid to talk about it. Even a lot of marriage family therapists I know are afraid to talk about it. When we talk about a healthy expression of sexuality, perhaps with more than one partner, now we're getting into an area that's challenging. How do you write about this? How do you communicate about this in a way that helps people to think critically and intelligently about it, as opposed to being completely defended and shut down to what is actually the reality for so many couples out there? So that has been the biggest challenge, is how to make something like that family-friendly, so to speak, how to make it fathomable and non-threatening for people that are reading this book. And that's also the most rewarding. Because, you know what, you can go to any bookstore anywhere and see 100 different books, but how do you choose which one is the right for you? I sought to create a book that would be able to get more depth into some of these more taboo issues and help people really learn how to construct the right relationship that's right for them and not need me. And so that, as I'm sure you can imagine, was a challenge, but I'm pretty happy with the results. And hearing the feedback I've gotten, seeing the feedback, and just the feedback I've gotten from my clients over the last 18 years using these tools in and of itself has been the greatest reward.
The title of the book is Rational Relating, A Smart Way to Stay Sane in the Crazy World of Love. And our author is Damon L. Jacobs, licensed marriage and family therapist. Damon, this is a great book. Where do we get copies of it?
You know, as they say all the time on your show, Jay, the usual suspects. So that's Amazon, that's at the Balboa Press website, Barnes & Noble online, and pretty much any place that's going to sell you books online. Rational Relating, Damon L. Jacobs. Google it. You'll find it. Two steps.
Are you planning to put a website out, or do you already have one in place?
I have a website. Actually, my main website is DamonLJacobs.com, and that's Damon, just like Matt Damon. DamonLJacobs.com. People can go there to see more about the book, more about the therapy I do, the speaking engagements. I also have a continuity program that is coming up that is in the works, which is going to be called Create Your Love. And it's not there yet, but it will be at createyourlove.com. And it will be a membership program where people can get training and tools and guidance about how to create the right relationship structure for them in real time.
Sounds like an exciting, exciting future. Any other books in the works at the moment?
At this moment, no. I'm also just continuing to promote my first book, which is called Absolutely Shouldless. It's very similar to Rational Relating in that it helps. It's not specifically about relationships, but it is about living in the world and challenging and eliminating toxic shoulds, the shoulds that hurt us about ourselves, about our partners, about the world, about the weather, things that really cause depression and anxiety and suffering in the long haul. So it's these, what I call my two babies now, Absolutely Shouldless, Rational Relating, and helping people in this world find the practical, rational, intelligent tools to live life with joy, with serenity, and pleasure.
Well, thank you, Damon, for joining us today. Hope to hear from you in the future.
I hope so. Thank you, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Listen Without Your Ears, The Road Ahead. And the author is Joe Greerder. And Joe joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Archway Publishing. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Well, listening without our ears, obviously, a profound kind of a statement, because there's a lot to learn by the listening from within. You call it your intuition. And you say this book shows how to listen to your best friend, which is you. Learn how to trust yourself. You're always with surrounding energies that continually flow communications out in subtle ways. You can hear these things through your feelings. I think we have some sense of that, but you obviously have really focused and observed this in great detail. So before we get into the details of your book, tell us a little bit about your background and how this all came about, Joe.
Well, it's interesting. I really have no business being an author. I'm a high school graduate. barely, I will say. Graduated in the mid-1970s, had no desire to go on to college. A blue-collar kind of guy my whole life, growing up, in ranching and farming, and working basically in different areas of the construction industry my entire life. So I'm an outdoor kind of hands-on, hard-working kind of person. And for many years, I would get feelings about things. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, mind-reading kind of feelings like that. It's nothing like that. They were so subtle that I kind of just would not really give them a lot of credence. And as you know, Steve, as we age, we kind of look at things differently. We maybe pay a little more attention in areas where when we were younger we didn't.
Right.
And it just kept increasing, if you will, and to a point to where I was almost having internal battles with myself. And if I may sound this a little, you know, simplistic, like maybe a comedy sketch or something, is part of me would say, "Listen to me, dang it." The other part of me would say, "No, I'm just making it up." And this would go on and on. And on the side, while all this is going on, my entire adult life, I've really enjoyed writing. And being a business owner now since age 29, which is 25 years and counting, I've had a lot of reasons to write, and usually in a professional aspect. But I've written articles in my various trades for different local publications and things like that. I always wrote. And probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, I wouldn't want to be quoted on that, but some time ago, I started writing articles, if you will, without anybody requesting that of me. As bizarre as that may sound, if I had a focal point, and I'll be honest, in those days, a lot of my focal points were kind of stresses, kind of personal issues and stuff, I may sit down at my desk and write 2 or 3 or 4 pages that you would think was an article being prepared to be sent to somebody, and they just end up in my desk drawer and go nowhere. So that's kind of my, if you will, quick history on who I am and what I've been about, and for people who read these books, they'll find out quickly that I've had a wide array, a very diversified set of life experiences thus far, and I more or less use those as a foundation, as you know, each chapter might be have some personal analogies in it or experiences, but then as I write about that individual subject matter, I will, at the risk of sounding a little bit superficial here, I will engage, if you will. It's as though I'm being helped along and just things flow. And they flow sometimes to the point to where an entire day goes by. And I mean 8-10 hours. My hand is hurting. And I've lost track of time. It just keeps coming out.
And you write about common life experiences.
Yes, sir. That's seems to be the nature of it so far. Common life experiences in which I've either had a significant amount of personal experience or I'm at least aware of it by someone or usually multiple people close to me. You know, if you happen to have a copy of this book, Listen Without Yours, in front of you, and you look at the table of contents, you can quickly see that the chapter titles are, it's not like one chapter is depending on a previous chapter. This is not a book of a storyline that you have to start at the beginning. You could literally pick this book up, turn to chapter 7, and start right there, and read that chapter as independent information of its own on that subject matter. Now, I will say, though, with that being said, you never know. I never really know who's going to relate to what subject matters, obviously, and again, obviously, I'd like to attract the biggest audience I can. This is not about selling books. These books were always going to happen. I didn't know that consciously until a few years ago, but these books were always going to happen. And just in 2012, which is December of 2012, as a matter of fact, is when I wrote the first words to this book, it all came into focus. It just rushed in, just all of a sudden. Things in my life kind of lined up, if you will. I like to say the stars aligned themselves, and it was time, and I knew it, and bam, I started writing without any concept, consciously, of knowing how long this would take, how many pages it would be. I just wrote, and I compiled it, and when I felt like I was done with this book, I was done.
So let's talk more about this phenomenon called listening, this personal experience, as you put it,
okay.
and how that listening can improve people's lives. So give us a little, what does it mean to listen?
You know, it sounds simplistic, yet I found verbally when I've done other interviews such as yours, it's kind of hard to explain, really. Everybody's heard terms like gut feelings or, you know, you get that sense when somebody's watching you, you know, from behind, so to speak, or all those things. There's many different ways to give it titles, but basically, I guess probably the most popular title it's been given, if you will, is the sixth sense. It's a non-tangible, we all have our five senses, or at least most of us do, barring any handicaps, and those five senses are based on the physical world. They're obvious exposures, if you will, sight, sound, taste, hearing, and touch. So you know if you hear something, you know if you see something. Because our physical world, at least these days, tends to be so busy, so energetic, physically speaking, these five senses tend to bombard us. They tend to just overwhelm us with data. And most people, in my experience, don't actually stop and take the time to just feel. I'm struggling for a way to make this clear, but just what you said earlier in the introduction, listen to your best friend, to yourself. That is profoundly true, yet inherently unused, or I should say drastically underused. You know everything you need to know inherently, instinctively, yet we follow along the blatant, obvious directions laid out before us, and in my opinion, sadly, a lot of these are societal driven. Maybe they're traditionally driven. You know, so many of us do so many things and follow so many directions in our life that we ourselves didn't really decide. It's just what we do these days, right? So I hope I've
yes.
I hope I haven't stumbled on myself too much there.
No, and I think again, we've all had, as you've pointed out, these feelings, these experiences, and
yes.
often they ring true with us, and something happens because yes. we had a feeling. Yep. So really, anybody yep. can do this.
You know, you're right. And Steve, have you ever had, I know you have, and I'm not trying to put you on a spot here and have you recite a date and a time, but have you ever had one of those times where something happens, whether it's large or small, doesn't matter, and you just said to yourself, I knew that was
right.
going to happen.
Oh,
I
yeah.
knew.
Definitely.
Well, there's a personal example of how did you know? What do you mean you knew? How
mm-hmm.
did you know?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in those quiet crevices of those subtle little bits of information, you got a feeling about something and you didn't give it the credence for whatever reason, probably because your external senses were bombarding you with other information, and you just kind of let it go, and then down the road, whether it's 5 minutes from now, tomorrow, next week, or next year, something takes place and you have that aha moment. You have that, dang, I knew it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm trying to do is give people a forefrontal, I don't even know if that's a word, I'm going to make it a word, but an awareness that this does take place, so maybe they can pay attention prior to
mm-hmm.
so it's not a past tense, so it's not necessarily always a, man, I knew that was going to happen, so now we can kind of give them a little more of those feelings, I mean, a little more credence in advance.
So instead of depending on others, a spouse, a boss, or even clergy,
yeah.
or, of course, unfortunately,
yeah.
so many reach out and depend and self-medicate
yeah.
with drugs
yeah.
or alcohol, we can find answers, what you're saying.
In
if
many
we
cases.
Would, if we
yes,
would
sir.
Listen.
I'm not,
yeah.
Yes,
I know you're not making.
I'm sorry I interrupted there.
No, but I know you're, you know, it may sound simple. It's not. But at the same time, the feelings that often come are real answers to maybe our challenges, you know, our problems.
You know, they could be. I don't know about a direct black and white answer, and possibly for some people. I'm not here to tell
mm-hmm.
each and every individual out there what their, you know, association with listening is going to be. But what I do want to say is it's not... it's not something we should just pass off. Our world is so full of now immediate satisfaction. And in fact, I'm sitting here myself as I'm talking to you, looking at the table of contents, and I see Chapter 11, the either-or restriction. That's a perfect example of what we're talking about. So many people have been conditioned. I mean, look, this has been going on for generation after generation. It just gradually increases to where we accept this or that. Two things can't be correct at the same time, right? Isn't that how we more or less have been conditioned?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. I mean, I suppose in some cases, in some of our most simplistic decisions, yeah, there's a right way and a wrong way, although I even challenge that, because right and wrong is based on an individual definition of right and wrong, based on their personal judgments and priority structures. So, you know, I don't want anybody to climb up on their roof of their two-story house and jump off because they think they can fly. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is just begin to give those little feelings, those little, if you're getting ready to walk into a restaurant for lunch, and as you get out of the car, you don't know why, just something says, I don't really know if I want to go in here. If you're not committed, if you're not just at the depth of your feelings committed to that, just pause, just for a second, just pause and just, give that some credence. I wonder why I'm feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was a very simple example of kind of what I'm talking about in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is one book in a series of at least, you say, three listen books.
Yes, sir.
Tell us, you know, where you're headed with all of this.
Well, it's interesting. This is going to seem quite quick, and I know we're here to talk about book one, Listen Without Your Ears, but In reality, book two is already completed and available to the public, and it's called Listen Out Loud. And book three, I will divulge this now publicly. As just this morning, before you called me, I'm writing the closing comments to book three, which is titled 2020 Listening. So in essence, three books are completed. One and two are available to the public. Book three will be published throughout the course of this year. And my best guess is, given the publication time it takes, probably late summer, early fall, that final book, or book three, will be available to the public. So that's why I call this a listen series of books, because they're all about the same general principle of listening to ourselves or listening to our intuition or that gut feeling, if you will.
Because often, as someone pointed out a long, long time ago to me, just because everybody's going in a certain direction, maybe that's not the best way for you to go. In fact, find out which way they're going and go the other way.
You know, I've heard that for a long time too, and that, for me, that bodes true in a lot of occasions. See what the masses are doing and run the other way. You know, I that might be a little over generic,
mm-hmm.
but the principle has some merit.
Right.
Absolutely has some merit. People in general, you know, and look, I live on the West Coast in the United States. Now, I've traveled pretty well through what I call the 13 western states. If you drew a line down the spine of the Rocky Mountains to the Pacific Ocean, I've traveled a lot of those areas. But as far as being a worldly traveler, I'm not. My exposure to that is just like probably many people these days via, you know, television and things like that. I am by no means a master of all societies and all cultures. I just know what I hear and what I feel. But you know, I think people in general are good. People are good at heart. I think there's an inherent nature that human beings in general want to be good to each other. I think we have been so caught up in tangibles and what we believe are required directions. And that might be a little strong, but how about inherited directions? And I don't want to get real controversial on air with you, but let's just take, for instance, you mentioned a while ago that this doesn't necessarily have a religious connotation, and it doesn't. By all means, that doesn't mean I am opposed to religions. What I am opposed to is the individual exclusiveness that some of them will profess. In other words, our way is right and others are wrong. I don't believe that for a minute. That doesn't mean to say that I believe theirs is wrong. It's just I don't believe that there is a single best way. I think there is better ways for individuals, but collectively, to me, if I were to sum it up, it's about the golden rule. And the golden rule is not written in any religious book. And if it is, it's because they're borrowing it. The golden rule is a human condition. It's a human principle of conduct. It doesn't matter to me what part of the globe, how old, how young, or what color you are. If you simply treat other people the way you want to be treated, it's amazing of how many of our problems collectively that would solve.
That's for sure. We've been listening to Joe Guirder. He's the author of his book, Listen Without Your Ears, The Road Ahead. Joe, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available on all the expected sources, Amazon. And now this is published through Archwood Publishing, which is a subsidiary of Simon & Schuster. So obviously people can go directly to either Simon & Schuster or Archway and find it there. But your main outlets, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I will say that book one has an audio version for folks who like to listen to it on tape or CD, whatever. I must give a little disclaimer there. I actually recorded the audio version myself, and I wasn't particularly happy with the quality. I'm much better at writing than I am at talking into a tape recorder. But be it as it is, that's what it is. You can get it in hardcover, softcover, or in an ebook for those folks who like to read ebooks.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for sharing with us.
Absolutely.
And being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Archway Publishing.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.